Good morning. We're going to start. My name is Norma Camacho, and welcome back, everybody. I think we've been gone for quite some time, and so hopefully everybody had a good summer. And for the record, I'm chair of the Los Angeles Regional Water Board, and today is Thursday, September 26th, and it is 9 a.m., and I'm officially calling this meeting to order. Now, for people who want to listen or to watch the meeting, the board's customary webcast is available, and there is a direct link to the webcast on the meeting agenda posted on our website. In addition, we are receiving presentations and public comment through a Zoom meeting platform and in person. And just for a bit of housekeeping, I just want to let everybody know that the men's restroom on the first floor is not working. And so if you need to go, the restroom is available on the ninth floor, so plan accordingly. And now, for people who want to listen or to watch the meeting in Spanish, we have Spanish interpretation services available on the Zoom platform. And instructions are shown on the slide, and I'm going to turn to Mr. Aldo Rentera to discuss how that is to be done.
Thank you, Chair Camacho. Muy buenos días a todos ustedes. Para las personas que nos van a estar acompañando el día de hoy, vamos a tener interpretación disponible para las personas que están en Zoom. Favor de presionar el icono que parece un mundo. Favor de presionarlo nuevamente en la parte de abajo para elegir español. Si tiene algún problema técnico, favor de escribirlo en el chat o alzar su mano y con mucho gusto los apoyaremos. Y para las personas que están aquí de formato presencial, favor de acercarse con nosotros en la parte trasera y les proporcionaremos un dispositivo para que la puedan escuchar. Muchísimas gracias y que tengan una buena reunión. Back to you, Chair Camacho. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And I also want to note that for all Los Angeles Regional Water Quality Control Board meetings, there is no expectation of privacy regarding any communications. And meetings are recorded, and names of participants are listed in the Zoom forum. And participation in a recorded meeting will be deemed consent to be recorded. And now before I do call roll, I do want to announce that we have a newly appointed board member. Unfortunately, he's not able to be here today, but our new board member is Eric Rodriguez, and he hails from South Pasadena, and he's bringing a wealth of financial experience from his role as vice president at Barclay and Citi. He also has a background in wastewater treatment from his service in the U.S. Army, so it's going to be an interesting perspective that he's going to be bringing to this board. And currently, he holds degrees in a Bachelor's of Arts in International Relations from Brown University, and he has a Master's in Public Policy from Harvard University. And we are really excited about the insights that he's going to be bringing to our board and the discussions, and we look forward to having him join us at future meetings. And so with that, if we could, Ms. Rowe, have roll call.
Yes, good morning, everyone. Board Member Ashia.
Present.
Chair Camacho.
Here.
Board Member Christensen.
Here.
Board Member Mendez. Vice Chair Nahai.
Here.
Board Member Rodriguez. Rose, call is completed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so we're going to move to item number two, which is the order of the agenda. And Ms. Arredondo, do we have any changes to the order?
There are no changes to the agenda today.
Okay. Thank you very much. So we'll move on to item number three, which is the adoption of the draft meeting minutes for June 27th. And are there any changes, or do I have a motion?
I'll move approval, Chair.
Okay. We have Vice Chair Nahai moving approval.
Second.
I have a second from Board Member Christensen. Can we have a roll call vote?
Board Member Ashian?
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Okay, we'll move on to item number four, which is board member communications. And so I just want to ask board members, are there any ex parte disclosures that you would like to discuss at this point? I'll start with Vice Chair.
No ex parte.
Okay. And no ex parte for myself?
None for me either.
None for me. Thank you.
Okay. And so I'll move to 4B, which is board member reports. And I can go to Vice Chair to ask if you have any report outs that you'd like to share with us.
Yes, I'll share one report. A couple of Fridays ago at the Los Angeles Business Council, we held our annual sustainability summit. This was the 18th annual sustainability summit. It was very, 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 very well attended. It was held at USC. I think we had something like 450 people in the audience and a few thousand that joined on land. I had the privilege of moderating the water panel. And we had just a stellar panel. It was very, very well received. And of course, we talked about Operation Next and the Hyperion 2035, which has now been renamed Pure Water LA. We talked about the PFAS challenges that confront us and confront our regional board here, as well as a number of other topics. We also touch base on the Safe Clean Water Program, the biennial review, and the improvements that are necessary to that program. And I think as time now goes on, it will become more and more a part of that conversation at the regional board here. So just wanted to report on that.
Thank you. We'll move to Board Member Christensen.
Yeah, thank you. I actually just have one announcement. I'm very happy to report that I've started as the new executive director for the Climate and Wildfire Institute. It's full remote, but a lot of it is focused up in the Lake Tahoe area, and I'm hoping to bring some focus down here to Southern California because, of course, as we all know, we have our own version of wildfires down here as well. But I look forward to working at this intersection of climate, water, and wildfires. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, and congratulations. Board Member Ashtiel?
Yes, congratulations on that new role. Great to see everyone after the sort of summer break. It's very nice to be back with everyone. I just wanted to share a couple of things. For the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, our next meeting is October 17th in Marina Del Rey, if those are interested in attending. I am at UCLA at the Emmett Institute on Climate Change and the Environment. We are planning to host a water symposium later this year. So at future meetings, I will let everyone know about that. We're looking at probably the December to February timeframe. And that's it for me. So thank you. Great to be here.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I do also have a report out. Although we didn't meet as the regional board during this summer, the Regional Oversight Committee for the Safe Clean Water Program certainly had their monthly meetings throughout the summer. And so they currently are working on the development of the watershed management plans, and they are identifying quantifiable targets. And at the August meeting, there was much discussion on water quality objectives. And because the discussions were very complicated and required more discussion, we did form a water quality subcommittee to really form some targets for future ROC discussions. And so I know that Jenny is going to be part of that discussion as well as Mark Gold. And so we look forward to having a meeting in the next 2 weeks to, bring some, thoughts to the full ROC committee for consideration. And also on August 29th, I did participate in the LA County Water Plan Regional Water Reliability Task Force. And so there was much discussion on some featured regional projects from the Flood Control District Reservoir Restoration Program. There was discussion on pure water as well. And they're currently revising their draft charter and clarifying the mission and priority tasks that they're going to be zeroing in on as part of that effort. And so a very busy summer. And so with that, if there's not any other comments, I see none. We'll go on to the executive officer's report, item number 5, Ms. Arredondo.
Thank you, Chair. I have a few updates. I have an update on the former United Technology Corporation, UTC, 6633 Canoga Avenue, Canoga Park. The former United Technologies Corporation site, also known as a former Rocketdyne site, is overseen by the site cleanup program. The site is located in Canoga Park and was recently highlighted in an August 29th LA Times article following the submittal of a June 2024 off-site investigation report. The report has heightened community and stakeholder interest due to the current assessment of potential vapor intrusion concerns off-site. Over the years, the LA Water Board has been briefed on the site, including an informational item in 2016 and on other subsequent EO updates. For some background, the site was developed in 1955 for the manufacture of rocket engines and related systems that occupied an area of approximately 47 acres. In August 2005, the site was acquired by UTC. Activities conducted on the site have included metal molding, machining, cleaning, degreasing, plating, and engine assembly. No testing of rocket engines or related systems were conducted at the site. In 2014, all the manufacturing activities were terminated and the site was vacated. In 2016 through 2017, all the remaining on-site buildings were demolished. The site is currently vacant land. Since 1984, soil vapor, and groundwater investigations and remediations have been conducted on and near the site. At various operational areas of the site, investigations found volatile organic compounds, VOCs, primarily tetrachloroethene, PCE, trichloroethene, TCE. These compounds are solvents commonly used to degrease and clean parts. Between 2016 through 2017, close to 9,000 tons of contaminated soil were excavated on site and taken to a licensed facility for disposal. In October 2021, the LA Water Board issued a completion of soil remediation activities for impacted soil. In 1991, groundwater cleanup began at the site and is currently ongoing. The groundwater is currently being treated using enhanced in situ bioremediation. This remediation has been successful in reducing the footprint of the groundwater plume. Based on the data collection on site, LA Water Board required that off-site soil vapor and additional groundwater assessment be performed. Between October 2023 and May 2024, the most recent off-site investigation was completed with a report of the results submitted on June 28, 2024. LA Water Board staff are currently reviewing the findings in the June 2024 report in consultation with the toxicologist at the Office of Environmental Health Hazard Assessment, OEHA. Based on the findings, additional soil vapor assessment is warranted to delineate the soil vapor plume, and indoor air sampling is needed at select locations near the site to assess potential vapor intrusion risk. Within the next 2 weeks, we'll be issuing a response letter to the responsible party to submit a work plan for the next steps. The site cleanup program works hard to keep the community and stakeholders informed. It's important and an integral part of our process. In November of 2020, we held a virtual public meeting where approximately 150 members of the public attended. At the meeting, we provided the public with an update on assessment and remediation activities. At key moments during various site assessment, the remediation activities, we send residents project updates and frequently asked questions in both English and in Spanish, including the recent off-site investigation activities. The most recent project updates were sent out in July 2020, October 2021, May 2023. These project updates were sent to approximately 7,000 residents and interested parties surrounding the site, including residents and businesses within a 500-foot radius of the property boundary. A new project update will be issued at the same time as our upcoming response letter. In addition, over the past years, staff have also met periodically with members of affected homeowners associations to provide information on the proposed off-site assessment work. The associations have assisted in gaining access to their properties for sampling. Within the past few weeks, staff have met with and provided briefings on the site with Los Angeles County Supervisor Horvath, Los Angeles City Council Member Blumenfield's offices. The site lies within their areas of representation. We continue to keep the public informed as much as possible on the current investigation activities and will continue to reach out to the community. My second update is on the former Waymire Drum Company. The site is located in the Florence Firestone area of the unincorporated Los Angeles County, south of downtown Los Angeles. The site is located in the SB 535 Disadvantaged Communities area. For the assessment and cleanup of the site, LA Water Board, the United States Environmental Protection Agency, and the Office of Attorney General of California are conducting multiple activities at the former Waymire Drum Company. Limited funding for conducting assessment at the site is being provided by an SB 445 contract. Since June 5, 2019, the US EPA has been conducting an emergency response action at the site. These activities include source assessment and removal and vapor intrusion assessment and mitigation. In addition, the US EPA conducted a source assessment to address the source of VOC vapors and installed an SVE system to address the source of vapors. The system was started up in October of 2022. LA Water Board staff continues to hold weekly meetings with the US EPA to discuss progress of the soil cleanup and operation. On May 13th of 2024, the LA Water Board staff and management met with California Department of Toxic Substance Control, DTSC, and the State Water Board and discussed a progress to formally request US EPA to have the site listed on the National Priorities List, NPL. This designation will allow for full assessment and cleanup of the cleanup to be conducted under the Comprehensive Environmental Response Compensation and Liability Act, CERCLA, and with the US EPA as a lead agency. Internal communication and processes are going with the State Board to submit the formal request through the Cal EPA. Several briefings related to the request have been conducted. These include a briefing held on June 24, 2024, to brief State Board management on the proposed NPL listing, and a briefing held on September 17, 2024 to brief Cal EPA on the proposed NPL listing. Staff continues to evaluate and pursue all avenues and opportunities to expedite the assessment and the cleanup of this site. I will now defer to our Assistant Executive Officer, Jenny Newman, to give us an update on the Chiquita Canyon landfill.
Thank you. My name is Jenny Newman, Assistant Executive Officer, and I'm going to give you an update on the situation at Chiquita Canyon Landfill in the unincorporated area of Los Angeles County, known as Castaic, and the multi-agency effort to manage the ongoing environmental and public health impacts of a subsurface smoldering reaction that's occurring at the landfill. The reaction is taking place in the northwest portion of the main canyon area of the landfill, and it's been going on since about 2002. Regional Board staff became aware of it in mid-2023. I'm sorry, if I said mid-2002, I meant mid-2022. So our update is that yesterday, staff reaffirmed its June 6th denial of Chiquita Canyon Landfill's application to place waste in a new area of the landfill known as Cell 8B. Staff issued an original denial for this placement on June 6th because there was insufficient information to evaluate the impact of the reaction on slope stability throughout the landfill. But the denial didn't preclude the landfill from submitting a revised global stability analysis to resolve the uncertainty, as well as a plan to contain the reaction. The landfill operator submitted an initial response on June 28th and an updated global stability analysis on August 23rd. Yesterday, staff determined that the submitted documents were inadequate. In particular, Chiquita's response didn't contain an adequate plan to stop the reaction from expanding, and its updated analysis still contained uncertainty regarding the impact of the reaction on slope stability, particularly during earthquake conditions. And so staff will continue to work with local, state, and federal agencies involved in the oversight of the reaction and we will keep the board updated. But that's just the latest in a series of actions we've taken to try and manage the environmental impacts of the reaction.
That will conclude the verbal EO report. Thank you.
Thank you very much for a thorough report. Do the board members have questions?
I have.
Okay. We will start with Vice Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the presentation. So regarding Rocketdyne at Canoga, so that work of remediation has been going on since 1991. If I could count, I wouldn't have gone to law school, but I think that's about 34 years now that that's been going on. And I know that there was a report, June, was provided. When can the board be apprised as to the results of that report, when you've had a chance to evaluate what is in it? And you don't have to answer this right now, but maybe at the next meeting we could get some kind of indication of when this is going to be over. If it's been going on remediation now for 34 years, we surely must be seeing some kind of light at the end of this particular tunnel. So maybe at the next meeting, as part of the EO report, you can tell us first what was the results of the June report that you received. What does that tell us, and when can we hope to see the final remediation of the site? So that's on Rocketdyne. And then on Chiquita, said Jenny that the response that we got from the landfill were inadequate. So in terms of the next enforcement step, because we cannot have this situation in which reports are required, they're given, and they're inadequate, and then we tell them that they're inadequate, and then what? At some point.
Okay, so the effect of our decision is that they can't place waste in cell 8B. So no enforcement is necessary. It's a denial of their ability to place waste in cell 8B. We told them they couldn't place waste there until they submitted an adequate report. And they didn't submit an adequate report, so they can't submit waste there.
All right, and the impact of that is it has a monetary impact on the landfill that they can't place waste. What does that mean to them that this particular restriction is being placed on them?
So we've heard from various sources that they will run out of space at the landfill to accept trash in October, sometime in October, between the 1st and the 27th. We've heard a range of times. And so there may be an impact on the landfill's ability to accept waste overall. So, yes, I imagine there would be a financial impact on the landfill. But the purpose of our action was to protect groundwater, because we had concerns that placing waste in cell 8B would threaten the liner and threaten groundwater.
All right. So will their inability to place more waste in and of itself protect groundwater, or is groundwater already threatened by the amount of waste that is sitting there without a liner?
So there is a liner underneath the area that's undergoing the reaction, but we are concerned that it is threatened by the reaction.
Mm-hmm.
And with our partners at CalRecycle and the local enforcement agency, are monitoring the temperatures of the reaction area and beyond to determine the extent, both depth, including depth. So we are analyzing the impacts to the groundwater, to the liner, from the reaction. We separately have issued a 13267, or excuse me, a notice of violation. Staff issued a notice of violation, requiring more investigation into the impact on the liner. So this denial of placement in a new cell is preventing a new threat to the liner from occurring there, but we are analyzing the ongoing threat.
Right,
in there.
Yeah. I understand. This action doesn't ameliorate the existing threat. It just stops it from getting worse. So in terms of the 13267 in the investigations, when do you think we will have the results of the investigation. Maybe by the next board meeting, can we be updated at that point?
We'll give you an update at the next board meeting on the results of the temperature monitoring probes and the assessment of the impact of the reaction on the liner. I think we'll get our regional board specific information in, I think, mid-October. So it should be ready by the next October meeting. If it's not, we'll give you an interim update and then give you a more complete one in November.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, if it can be done by the next October meeting, I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in this. People
right.
are concerned. And so, you know, okay.
May I add, we also have ongoing groundwater monitoring that has indicated so far no impact to the liner. We're not seeing any leakage of leachate from the landfill to the groundwater from our groundwater monitoring wells. And we have required them to install some new wells, so we'll have even more information about that also should come the next meeting.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Okay. Yes, thank you. Go ahead.
Also on Chiquita, thank you both for that report. I do just want to say by the time our groundwater monitoring picks up on something, it's sort of already too late, you know? And so my question is about the reaction itself. I am not a chemist. I did horribly in chemistry, but I believe that for any reaction, there's a neutralizing agent that could be used. So do these agencies know what exactly is causing the reaction, and is there a mitigation for it?
So to date, the agency's focus has been on containing the reaction and stopping mitigating the impacts that are going on right now, and less into investigating the root cause of the reaction, although that will come. And what the actions to date have been to contain the reaction is, again, CalRecycle and the local enforcement agency have been requiring a reaction containment plan from the landfill. And the kinds of things they're looking at are barriers, breaks in the waste to prevent the reaction from spreading. So that's the gist of the efforts to stop the reaction from spreading. Also, removing the leachate. The reaction is producing excessive quantities of leachate. And the main focus the past several months has been getting the leachate out and safely disposed of. And that's been one of the main focuses of the agencies overseeing the issue.
So then it's not, there's not a plan to stop the reaction itself. It's like you're saying, it's about containing it.
Yes, that is the way to stop it, as I know, is to contain it so that it can't spread, and slow it down so that it will go out on its own.
Got it.
Remove
okay.
the fuel.
Yeah, okay, got it. All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Board Member Brashia.
Questions, but I just wanted to thank you both for those two reports, because I know those are issues that are very important to the community in terms of public health as well as the environmental devastation that can occur. So thank you both.
Yeah, and I'd just like to add to that, not only to thank the both of you, but to thank staff for being at all places all the time, and to really thank you for the public engagement that your staff continually does to reach out to the community to keep them informed on, you know, these ever-changing issues. And so, and thanks for keeping us informed as well, too. So we look forward to more reports next meeting. Okay. So with that, we'll go on to our next item, which is item number 6, which is an update from the State Water Board. And we have State Board Member Nicole Morgan that's going to be virtually participating at our meeting today. If we could get her online. Hello, Nicole.
Good morning, Dr. Camacho, members of the board. Happy to be able to join you this morning. So just have a few updates for you that I would like to share. So the first is our Making Conservation a Way of Life rulemaking. On July 3rd, the State Board adopted the proposed regulation to make California, to make conservation a California way of life. The regulation applies to the state's largest water utilities, urban retail water suppliers, which serve 95% of California's residents. It does not apply to individuals or households. Actions are already underway by suppliers, businesses, and residents combined with the regulation are expected to produce about 500,000 acre-feet of water savings annually by 2040, enough to supply more than 1.4 million households for a year. The regulation is expected to be in effect by January 1st, 2025. To learn more about how the state is emphasizing efficient water use and long-term conservation goals, please visit the Water Board's conservation portal. So changing subjects over to stormwater, the State Board held two staff workshops to answer questions on the informal draft small municipal stormwater permit. The virtual workshop was held on Tuesday, September 3rd, and in-person workshop was held on September 5th. So stay tuned. The draft staff took in all those comments and will be reissuing, sending out a updated draft on the draft permit. A lot of drafts were used in that sentence there. Apologize. So the Delta Conveyance Project, on July 31st, State Board staff issued a public notice which sets forth the hearing issues, participation information, and hearing schedule. The deadline to submit written comments on hearing issues was September 5th. The second pre-conference hearing is scheduled for July 17th. Please note that ex parte rules apply to state board members and Pacific staff. So Division of Financial Assistance funding programs each year, the State Board adopts new attendant use plans. And so the plans were adopted for the 24-25 Clean Water State Revolving Fund, the Drinking Water State Revolving Fund, and the Fund Expenditure Plan for the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water. So that concludes my report. I'm vocal if there are any questions.
Are there any questions from any of the board members? Oh, yes, Vice Chair, please.
Thank you very much for the report and for joining us this morning. Thank you. So my question is about the recent court decision on the probation finding, for, I think it was for the Tulare sub-basin. And whether there's been adequate time to analyze the ramifications of the court decision, is there going to be an appeal of it, or at some point will we receive some report on just exactly what the repercussions and impact of that court decision may be as the state moves forward with the implementation of SGMA. And the execution of its mandates through the mechanism that's been set up under the law, which apparently the court sought fit to cast doubt on.
Well, what I can say is that the case is still ongoing, and so you know that is you're correct. It is the Tulare sub-basin, and so that is still ongoing. We will, you know, see how that plays out as it continues. And then last month, actually earlier this month, it's not quite October yet. Earlier this month, the State Board did have a hearing for the Tule sub-basin, and two of the GSAs were found to, we found two of them to, for exempt from fees and from reporting. And then the rest of the sub-basin was placed under probation. And so we're continuing to implement SGMA as it is written, as we see written by the law and advised by our attorneys. And so we're still moving through that process. And, you know, as we have further updates, we're happy to share.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Board Member Morgan. I think we don't have any other questions, so thank you for a very thorough report. And so we will move on now to item number 7, which is public forum. And just to remind everybody, each speaker will have 3 minutes to address the board unless additional time was requested and approved in advance. And also want to note that comments during public forum should be on items that are not pending or scheduled to appear on the agenda and which are not otherwise on today's agenda. So we'll start with in-person speakers first, and the first in-person speaker I have is Glenn Cao from the City of Norwalk. So, Mr. Cao?
Why does it keep coming out? Good morning, Chair Camacho, board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Do you have a presentation? Okay. Okay, go ahead.
Thank you. Next slide, please. Again, good morning. My name is Glenn Cao. I'm the Public Services Director, City Engineer for the City of Norwalk. And our mayor, Margarita Rios, has sent Chair Camacho and Vice Chair Nahai a letter raising 3 major concerns to us. Norwalk's ongoing concern is the regional board's apparent unwillingness to meet with us to discuss, mitigate, negotiate in good faith issues we raise in the writ of mandate as stipulated by LA Superior Court Judge James Chalfant. The only time board staff met with us. Is that better? I'm afraid I was going to get feedback, so I'll start at the second bullet again. Norwalk's ongoing concern is the regional board's apparent unwillingness to meet with us to discuss, negotiate in good faith, issues raised in its writ of mandate as stipulated by LA Superior Court Judge James Chalfant. The only time board staff met with city staff, which is our city manager, Jesus Gomez, and myself, was in November 2023, just under a year ago. Okay. Since then, we've requested to meet with the regional board staff 4 additional times with no response. Norwalk's raised several issues in the writ of mandate. First is having to implement a watershed management program to comply with TMDLs, failed to implement a WMP, which requires costly infiltration projects, would result in fines in the event of pollutant exceedance is detected through monitoring. This is coercion and illegal. Norwalk has argued that stormwater management program is the standard of compliance requirement for all MS4s in California that determines compliance, not the watershed management plan or program. This is also affirmed by the State Board in the Caltrans MS4's permit. Second, this leads to Norwalk's next concern. Ventura County MS4s are not required to implement WMPs, but instead are allowed to achieve compliance by implementing SWIMPs guided through an iterative process. Despite that, the MS4 permit requires compliance with WMPs for both Ventura and LA County. Clearly, this is unfair and discriminatory. Next, we learned that MS4 data that was collected and paid for by MS4s for years 2015 and 2019 failed to determine compliance with pollutants. Although thousands of results were reported, they were not measured against water quality objectives, which are needed to protect beneficial uses of water bodies. As stated in Mayor Rios' letter, Norwalk spent approximately $400,000 on monitoring over during that five-year period. The data was supposed to determine exceedances of pollutants, which are then used to place a pollutant on a 303D list, which determines if a water body is impaired. If impaired, the water body requires a TMDL. In brief, the money spent on monitoring was a waste. This is why the regional board, regional board should direct staff to meet with Norwalk staff to resolve these and other issues. Norwalk believes that the most obvious solution is to either reopen or rewrite the MS4 permit to eliminate the WMP as the mandatory requirement and make it voluntary. The SWIP iterative process would be the primary compliance determinant, while the WMP would be optional. Doing so would not affect Safe Clean Water funding. MS4s would still be able to apply for funding to construct infiltration projects if they desire to do so. Norwalk, for example, would implement a SWIMP to achieve compliance, but would also be able to implement infiltration projects, which we have currently under design, and it's funded through the Safe Clean Water Funds. Lastly, both regional and state boards should inform MS4 permittees that they are no longer required to perform MS4 monitoring and to eliminate 303 delistings based on the previously mentioned MS4 monitoring data collected over the 5 years. I appreciate the opportunity and thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Gao. Yeah, I do have a couple of questions for staff, but maybe Board Member Christensen, do you want to start?
I probably have the same questions that you do. I would love for staff to explain why there are discrepancies, from between Ventura and Norwalk. But I also want to say this is an interesting approach in trying to get a board to cooperate in your favor, to come here and say that coercion has happened and that there are illegal activities and discrimination happening. Those are big words, and you better have receipts if you're going to throw that around. I would also recommend that in the future, you don't need to put your whole script up as a presentation, but can keep it just to the bullet points that you want us to pay attention to. With that, I will defer to staff.
Board Member Christensen, there are no discrepancies between Ventura and Norwalk, and Jenny Newman can speak a little bit more on that if you want.
Sure. So Mr. Cowell's presentation referred to watershed management programs, saying that they were voluntary for Ventura County but not LA County, or that is not true. They are the same. The watershed management provisions under the 2021 regional MS4 permit are voluntary. It's in the plain language of the permit, and it is the same for both LA and Ventura County permittees. I think the underlying issue is the numeric effluent limits in the permit and the fact that the watershed management program is one alternative means of compliance with those numeric effluent limitations. And what he's saying is that if you don't do a watershed management program, you must comply with numeric effluent limits. And to that, just one, that's not exactly true, because by the final compliance date, everyone must comply with numeric effluent limits. The watershed management programs are meant to get permittees to final compliance, and they serve as the interim measure, except for in very limited circumstances when the permittees can show, infiltration of the full design storm volume. So that's getting in the weeds a bit. the watershed management programs are voluntary, and the underlying numeric effluent limits are the effective permit requirements. They were adopted by this board in 2021. They were upheld by state board, and they apply to both LA and Ventura County permittees. The watershed management program is a voluntary option available for both counties. If you don't mind, I could just address the other statements that Mr. Cao made. So he referenced a letter from Mayor Rios to the chair and vice chair, and staff are working on a response to that, and we're planning to send that formal response very soon. I wanted to address the claim that staff haven't met in good faith with the City of Norwalk. I'd like to ask legal counsel to briefly talk about this stipulated order, which he's not quite characterized right. Can we start there?
Sure. There appears to be a misunderstanding about what the stipulated order is and who ordered what. The City of Norwalk has repeatedly accused us of violating an order issued by Judge Salfont. This case never actually went to trial. We didn't brief it. We mutually agreed to dismiss the lawsuit and to have conversations and engage in good faith, and the judge stamped an order acknowledging that we agreed to that. Staff has met with them. We also have repeatedly on the record at board meetings in response to comments explained these same issues, and so to the extent that there are concerns about who's engaging in good faith, I think we share them, that the City of Norwalk just wants us to rescind our permit based on solely their complaint and not the complaints of the 98 other permittees that are in that order.
Thank you, Adriana. So I was going to say that, yes, staff felt like we have been negotiating in good faith. We did meet with the city in November. The purpose of our agreement was that we would discuss implementation, creative solutions to implementation, and we felt like the meeting went in a different direction, that like Adriana said, that the city just wanted to talk about the faults of our permit and demand explanations from staff for the requirements. And so we did do that at the meeting, but then in these subsequent email requests for other meetings, the city made it clear that the outcome they wanted was for us to rescind the permit. So we felt like it wasn't in accordance with our agreement or necessary to continue to meet if that was the purpose of the meeting. And then the last thing that Mr. Cao brought up was that the monitoring data is not being used, and that's not correct. The monitoring data is being used for both compliance assurance purposes. With permittees, monitoring data are measured against the permit limits to determine compliance. And then also the permit data, it has been used in assessing the water quality of the receiving waters through the Clean Water Act 303D list. That data is all publicly available, and I could ask Dr. Nye to come up and explain it if you don't mind. But just suffice to say the data is used by State Board and Regional Board staff through the 303D listing process, and State Board has spent a great deal of effort to try and explain the data and make it accessible to the city and their consultant.
No, I would just add that in the 303D list, you can easily access all the data that was considered, MS4 data from other sources too, obviously, and you can see the objective to which it's compared for the purpose of 303D listing. So you see all the lines of evidence, and you see all the factors that are in the decision that was finally made to list or not list. And it's pretty easily available on the State Board's 303D website, all of that information.
Thank you, Dr. Nye. And we can also send the State Board staff's response letter to the concerns about the 303D list. And just, we think monitoring is very important, and the data is very useful. So we don't recommend that we tell all the permittees to stop monitoring.
Chair, if I may.
Yes.
I would just recommend that you fast track that response to Mayor Rios, and in, you know, maybe re-include links to those data sets, simply to continue to show our good faith. But agreed, monitoring is incredibly important and is how we protect public health. And I would invite any of our permittees to consider their burden of public health as well. Thank you.
Any other comments or questions? Board Member Astia?
No, I think Board Member Christensen summed it up perfectly. Thank you.
Yeah, and I just do want to reiterate my questions were exactly the same, so thank you, staff, for answering them and to make clear that there is no coercion. We have been discussing this matter in good faith, and also that there is no discriminatory actions being done by staff or this board to date. And so I'm glad to that we've cleared that. Thank you very much. Okay, with that, we'll have our next speaker, Mr. Ray Tahir.
Good morning, board members. I would like to expand on comments made by Public Services Director Kyle regarding Mayor Rios' letter to the chair and vice chair. What I am left with as a result of Glenn's presentation and your responses is that you guys do not know the facts. Starting with coercion, if you look at the MS4 permit, if a permittee doesn't implement a watershed management program, it'll be in noncompliance. Okay, that's the coercion. It forces you to join a WIP. And you guys are not getting it because it's very complicated, which begs the need for us to sit down offline and to discuss what the real facts are, because staff doesn't have it right. And I can prove that staff doesn't have it right. Okay, it's coercive. And I'll show you the parts of the MS4 permit that say that. And every MS4 permittee knows that they're coerced into participating in a WIMP as opposed to a SWIMP. And in terms of the data, the MS4 data, okay. Let me show, if you look at that slide, it shows, and there were 100,000 data points. It shows that although the results were reported, okay, it wasn't compared against the water quality standards, okay, to determine exceedances. Water quality standards are extremely important, okay? But they were not mentioned. You know why they weren't mentioned? Because the water quality standards and objectives were never established. The state board knows this, but you folks need to appreciate and know this as well. Let's see here. Now, let me explain the process to you. Once an exceedance is determined, or the frequency of exceedances are determined, it has to be plugged into the state's TMDL listing policy, which has certain tables, okay? Tables for toxicants, tables for non-toxicants, okay? Once that data is plugged in, then a determination is made as to whether a pollutant is placed on the 303D list, okay? That has not been done. So I'd like to ask Jenny, the MS4 data, there's over 100,000 data points. It shows only the results and no exceedances. So how would you account for that? Where are the water quality standards and where are the water quality objectives? As I told the state board, they were never adopted. And I asked them the question, if they were adopted, when were they adopted? They don't have an answer. They don't have an answer. Folks, you really need to get this. In fact, Glenn didn't mention this, but if we don't get anywhere with you folks, then we're going to go to the state board. They're the ones who are in control of the 2024 integrated report. Ms. Christensen, this is very complicated.
Mr. Tahir, you are. You
do not speak to me like that.
I said, Ms. Christensen, this is very complicated.
You don't have to speak down to anybody on this board.
I'm not speaking down to you. I'm speaking objectively to you. That's all.
Your definition of objective is
we wouldn't have to be here if
Mr. Tahir, you are out of time. You are out of time. Please.
You agreed to meet with us.
You are out of time.
Yeah, I understand that.
Thank you. Thank you. And I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree on the issue. We need to agree to disagree. I disagree that coercion has been going on. It has not. And staff explained that very thoroughly. Thank you very much, Mr. Tahir. We'll move on to our next speaker, which is going to be Ms. Annalisa Moe from Heal the Bay. I believe she is here in person. Thank you.
Awesome. Okay, so we've got the presentation up there already. Hi, everybody. Hello, board members. My name is Annalisa. I'm here on behalf of Heal the Bay, and I'm going to present the results from two of the reports that we released this summer since the last time we all met together. I am reporting on two reports in 10 minutes, so I'm really just going to hit the highlights, but I'm happy to answer questions or follow up after the meeting. So the first is our beach report card. This started over 30 years ago, and in fact, next year is going to be our 35th year of releasing this report. So there's a lot of data that we have collected over the years. This gives an A through F grade for each monitored location along the West Coast based on exceedances of state water quality standards, specifically for bacteria. And the grades are an overall indicator of water quality at beaches during associated grading periods. And for the reports, we're looking at the year, but we do separate it into summer dry weather, winter dry weather, and then year-long wet weather. Next slide. So results for California. We do also look at Oregon and Washington, but California has the most robust data set because of AB 411 that requires weekly sampling, particularly during the summer months. We're looking at 89% of Californian beaches receiving an A or B grade during summer dry weather, which means that it is safe to swim. And that is good news. It's slightly below the average, but it's pretty close to what we've seen over the past 5 years. So that's holding pretty steady. The two kind of confusing numbers are when we get to the winter dry grades, which are much lower than they usually are, with only 66% safe to swim. And the wet weather grades, which actually are higher than what we expected. And from our conversations with folks, we've determined that this is most likely because of the large rain events that we've had these last couple of years, actually making it unsafe to sample during that first flush period. So we go out and sample when it becomes safe to do so, which we support, but at that point we have flushed some of that initial pollution out to the ocean. Next slide. We want to definitely highlight the good news. So again, 90% of beaches during the summer months are safe to swim. We also have 12 beaches that qualified for our honor roll list, and this is incredibly difficult because they have to get A-plus grades, so zero exceedances, in all three conditions, summer dry, winter dry, and wet. So we have 12 beaches this year. It's a definite improvement over last year where we only had two. But in previous years, we did see between 30 and 50 sites, so it's still lower than what we'd like to see. And this may be in part due to the issues with sampling during the large rain events. It might also have to do with the fact that sampling is not required during the winter months. And in order to qualify for this list, it needs to be year-round. And then finally, we do have some sites in San Diego that are now using ddPCR. And we really support pursuing new and innovative ways to analyze bacteria data. But unfortunately, our grading system is not yet compatible with that. And we have some concerns about what exactly those numbers mean. So wanting to get that settled before we make any determinations. Next slide. We do, of course, have to recognize that there are also poor water quality grades. Beach Bummers is specifically for the summer dry weather grades, so we are still seeing a number of failing beaches. We had more than 10, but had an F grade, but these were the 10 worst. There are two here in the Los Angeles area. Mother's Beach is a chronic beach bummer, and we're not entirely sure what to do there, but we are continuing conversations with the county, trying to explore some options. The other is Santa Monica Pier. And of course, for Gila Bay, that's right in our backyard. And we are in talks with the city to create a task force to really dive into this, because this is a site that has been on and off our bummer list for the last decade. So trying to figure out what's going on there. We did, of course, this year see an increase in sites in San Diego County and Baja California, and this is primarily due to undertreated sewage that is flowing through the Tijuana River, and there are a number of cross-border efforts that are in place, and we're moving forward to try to address that. Next slide. So as I mentioned earlier, there's definitely some consequences from the heavy storms that we've seen. This is a trend that we saw the last 2 years, which are two of the wettest years on record. So we did see winter dry grades suffer due to the prolonged presence of pollutants in our waters, and that wet weather was not as poor as expected, but might be due to the difficulty in sampling collection. And then finally, there is a huge amount of sewage spills in California in this past year. 38 million gallons of sewage spilled into the ocean and coastal waterways, which of course has an immediate effect potentially on human health if they are to come in contact with that water, but also has long-term effects on the ocean, exacerbating ocean acidification. Next slide, please. So our report really highlights the need for infrastructure upgrades, both with stormwater capture and also sewage infrastructure upgrades to tackle the issue of sewage spills, but also need for enhancements around public notification. And that is something that Gila Bay is going to be reaching out to work more closely with your staff, but also directly with cities to understand how we can get that message out better. Next slide. Now onto the river report card. This report card started in 2017. We started monitoring in 2014, but it took a few years before we had enough for the full report. So in 2023, we actually unveiled a brand new grading system that matches the A through F grades that we use on our beach report card, which is just very easy to digest. And luckily, we were able to hire 12 students last year and 14 students this year to help us with the sampling, but we also get data from other monitoring groups in the Los Angeles County. Next slide, please. We've got, again, some good news. 64% of freshwater recreation sites received either an A+, an A or a B grade, which is safe to swim. There were a number of sites that received lower grades. This is the data, again, from this report this year, but we are also right now in September wrapping up this summer's sampling season, and we're seeing, again, pretty high numbers of A and B grades, particularly in areas that are very distinctly designated for recreational use and also used very often for recreational use, so upper LA River area, San Gabriel Mountains, that type of area. Unfortunately, we are still seeing pretty consistent failing grades in the lower Los Angeles River watershed, and while those areas are not necessarily designated for Rec 1 beneficial uses, there are still opportunities for recreation in that area, and we want to make sure that everybody has access to clean water. Next slide, please. So this shows more of the distribution from last year's grade. Again, Santa Monica Mountains, San Gabriel Mountains, water's looking great. We have some mixed grades in the upper LA River area and pretty consistently failing grades in lower LA. Next slide, please. We also have an honor roll list here, so we have sites that are consistently getting A+ grades. Again, there's good news here. A lot in the upper LA River watershed, San Gabriel and Malibu. And again, this means that there were no exceedances at these sites. Next slide, please. And for this report, we look at freshwater fails, which are the sites that did receive an F grade. And they are primarily in the lower Los Angeles River watershed, although there were a couple of sites in the upper LA River watershed as well. And that is an area that is often used for recreation. Next slide, please. Okay, that is the end of my presentation. So I have a couple minutes left. I'm happy to answer questions, or again, you know, touch base one-on-one offline if there are more in-depth discussions that you all would like to have. Thank you very much.
Thank you for that report. Is there any questions for Ms. Mo? Yes, Vice Chair.
Well, first, I just want to commend Hilda Bay for this great service that that your organization does for the whole region for so many years. It really is an invaluable tool. My daughter and son-in-law were taking their four-year-old girl to the beach a couple of weeks ago, and they called me. I said, you know what? Look at the Hilda Bay report. Look at that. So it really is a service, and I think we are, all of us, indebted to Hilda Bay for all the work that it does. Regarding Santa Monica Pier, something's got to be done, man. I was there last week. There are people that are swimming all around that pier, you know, completely oblivious to the fact that it receives these failing grades every time. I don't think people are being told about the water quality there, and it's just such a beautiful resource right next to the pier, the restaurants, the foot traffic. It's very natural for people to want to recreate there. Yeah. So I think whatever you can do, whatever we can do, to try to remedy the situation at Santa Monica Pier, it really is it's an embarrassment, quite frankly, to the city and to the city of Santa Monica and to our region, and to see so many beaches in Orange County receive such stellar grades, while our own Santa Monica Pier that bears the name of Santa Monica Bay fail in this way. It's a pity, really is. But yeah, all of the other ones that are receiving A+ grades, wonderful news. Thanks so much.
Yes, thank you, Vice Chair. And I agree. Good news of that is that if you look about 100 yards in either direction of the pier, we do have A grades until you get to Pico Kenter Storm Drain, and then things get rocky again. But there are safe places for folks to enter the water near the pier. There are small signs posted on either side of the pier, but they are largely ignored. So that is going to be a goal of Heal the Bay, is to figure out how to better communicate that information to make sure that people can enter the water and have a great day at the beach, but not get sick in the process. And as I mentioned, we are in talks with the city of Santa Monica to put together a task force that will really dive into all of the existing data, all of the projects that have gone online, if there are any issues there that could be remedied. So hopefully within the next year, we will start to have an idea of how to tackle this.
Let us know how the regional board can be helpful in that effort with the task force as well.
Absolutely, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions or comments for Ms. Mo? Go ahead.
Just want to echo Vice Chair Nahai's thank you to Heal the Bay for this important resource that I know I send out to people every year, and I think it's really beneficial. So thank you for the work that you do.
Thank you.
Yes, and I want to underscore that as well, that we all thank you very much for this very important work. And again, if there's anything that we can do to help the Santa Monica process, just let us know. And thank you again, Ms. Mo.
Absolutely. Thank you all.
Okay. Now, we do have some virtual speakers. And the first is Mr. Walter Lamb, and he has 6 minutes. If we could bring him up.
Good morning, Chair Camacho, Vice Chair Nahai, other board members and staff. I do have a presentation. As that comes up, I'll just note that at the June meeting, there was some discussion, and Vice Chair Nahai, I think you had asked for an update on, you know, sort of a legal analysis. And we've been inquiring about that. Staff had indicated that they would provide a report. Didn't hear anything today during the executive officer's report and made a couple inquiries about it. Hopefully it's not the case that after I expend all of my speaking time, staff will deliver that report, because that would make, you know, it fairly inefficient, you know, to have a good interactive conversation. This picture taken a couple days ago, Southeast Area B, one of the healthier areas of the reserve. If I could get the next slide, please. I want to try to keep this as simple as possible. Obviously, you know, there's been something that's been going on for a long time. There's a lot of different information. But what I've been trying to bring to the attention of this board for quite some time now is that the Bino Wetlands Restoration Project cannot be implemented without a federal environmental impact statement approved by the Corps of Engineers. I want to make clear that that's not my determination. That's the determination of the Corps of Engineers and the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. I did ask your staff, you know, to sort of acknowledge this, and they said that they had no opinion on it. And I think that's a concern only because, as the regulatory agency, if you're trying to get the TMDLs implemented, you sort of have to understand what are all the things that need to be done to get them implemented, and you have to understand what the timing is. The Corps of Engineers suspended their work 5 years ago. There's no plans for them to resume their work. So there's really no plan in place to get an EIS. And because of that, there's no plan or schedule in place for implementation of the TMDLs. And so I think that's the concern that I would ask you to familiarize yourself with a little bit. Unless something changes, there's no rational basis to believe the TMDLs will ever be implemented, right? This isn't a matter of, well, it could be 10 years or 20 years. You know, this is sort of a circular thing. If you keep going on the circle, you'll not reach the end. And our request, really, I think, pretty basic request, has just been to adopt an implementation plan and schedule. We're not really, we're confused about the strenuous resistance to that. I've never been involved with a project of any kind, be it planning a high school reunion, you know, to projects I did when I was in the Army. You know, it was never the case that somebody would say we're better off without a plan and schedule. So that's a remaining source of confusion. If I could have the next slide, please. Again, I could, you know, put all kinds of information in front of you. I think it's only going to matter if you're receptive to it. An approved EIS is required for the project. This is the Department of Fish and Wildlife acknowledging that in a court filing. You can have the next slide, please. Similarly, it is on their Q&A for the project. The next slide, please. You got, this is the a slide that was shown to, shown at the SMBRC meeting. Army Corps of Engineers Record of Decision, that's the EIS. If I could get the next slide, please. Friends of Bino Wetlands presented to you, and one of the things on their timeline, Army Corps finished EIS. And then in terms of the implementation, so if you go to the next one, that would be great. We have a lot of unknowns on the timeline, right? So unknown isn't really the best piece of information when you're trying to figure out when the TMDLs, you know, will or will not be implemented. Next slide, please. And again, the sequences one and two, when you hear initial sequences or sequences one and two, when I say those can't achieve the TMDL compliance, again, that's not an opinion that I've formed. That is the way the project was designed. It's that these were just the first two of 35 sequences. They just don't address the TMDLs. They're in different areas than where the work needs to be done. Next slide, please. The best analogy I can use is if you were excited to take a cross-country road trip because you really wanted to see the Grand Canyon, the St. Louis Arch, and the Statue of Liberty, but then that road trip got limited to just the state of California, you're not going to see those things, right? It's a little bit of a bait and switch. If there's no EIS for the project, we don't think any of the project can be done, but even if the first two sequences could be done, it would be like driving to Needles, California. You could call it the start of a cross-country trip, but it really isn't unless you're going to continue, and they can't continue. We don't think they can do any of it. They certainly can't continue without an EIS. Next slide, please. And so, again, Area A is the most degraded area in Biono. This is a camera angle that makes it look even worse than it is, but we do agree that Area A is the most degraded area. This was from the Friends presentation. This is not where the initial work would happen. This is where the work would need to happen if you're going to try to implement the TMDLs via the project. Next slide, please. And it's the same thing with legacy sediment. Even this slide shows that there's only 700 cubic yards in Area B. If you go to the next slide, I think more importantly is these initial sequences would only address 88,500, which, and sorry, one more slide, if you could go to the next one. That is, you know, a very small percentage of what's need to be done. Next slide, please, kind of shooting through these quickly. There are alternative loads that there would needs to be a proposal submitted, right? And that hasn't happened. The alternative loads are important because sea level rise is changing the way we think about how much sediment may or may not need to be removed. Next slide, please. And then, well, I won't really have time to get into this. So I'd rather just use my last 15 seconds here to say, this doesn't need to be adversarial, right? We're all trying to solve a problem. And I think a implementation plan and schedule helps get all the things on the table that need to happen for this to move forward with timelines. That's the whole point of an implementation plan and schedule. We really need one. And so I'm hoping there's some more information discussed today. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Lamb. Any comments or questions? Yeah, and I just want to thank you, Mr. Lamb, for continuing to bring this issue up to our attention. And again, I will let you know that we are following this and we are keeping track of this. And we all want to see this expedited as quickly as possible. And I think that you coming and telling us and really bringing it up to the public just to keep the public involved is very important. So, again, I thank you very much. With that,
Chair, if I could speak. So I wanted to address the legal update question. So I did draft a legal update and sent that separately to the board members by email. It was determined that we didn't feel comfortable discussing another agency's litigation in open session. But if you would like to discuss that with us, we can't speculate on what's going to happen with Fish and Wildlife's litigation, but yeah.
Thank you very much, Council. And so with that, I do have one more virtual speaker, and that's Candace Menigan from the Friends of the Santa Clara River, and hopefully I got that right. Is she on?
She's on, but.
Oh, maybe if you could unmute yourself.
I'm not sure she's present.
Okay. And perhaps we can come back to that at some other time, or perhaps the next meeting. But again, we apologize that we can't get her up online. But with that, any other? Oh, yes, Vice Chair, go ahead.
Yeah, if I may. I noticed that Mr. Cow and Mr. Tahir have left the room, but I did want to say a couple of things. First of all, the way that Mr. Tahir acted during his public comments, I know that we were all quite disturbed by the way that he conducted himself, the words that he used, the tone that he employed. It was disrespectful, and I was personally taken aback and offended by it. I agree with Board Member Christensen that we should expedite getting that response to Mayor Rios. The quicker, the better. And I'll also say this. Mr. Cow, in his comments, actually said that the MS4 permit should be rescinded. If that is the position of Norwalk, well, then it really leaves very, very little room to talk about anything. because that permit is not going to be rescinded by the board. It has not been ruled invalid in any way. And so I think let's get that letter out. Let's get it to Norwalk as quickly as possible. And then, if the city truly believes that the board has somehow violated the judge's decree in this regard, well, then that's what the courts are for. But to have this situation in which, you know, month after month, we have a representative of the city come before us and make claims which some of which appear to be just invented out of whole cloth in terms of legal theories and so on, which our counsel reject and refute time after time, that is just not, I think, a productive use of the board's time, nor, quite frankly, a productive use of Norwalk's money and resources either. So, so the quicker we get that out and try to move this on, the better. Thanks so much.
Yes, very well said. And I think we all share your sentiments, Vice Chair, on that. And again, you know, I really have to thank staff for really being able to stand up to, you know, those types of issues. Because there's one thing to disagree, but it's another thing when you're faced with disrespect. And I think that staff has done a very good job in maintaining composure in the face of disrespect. Thank you. So we are going to continue on to uncontested items. And since we do not have any comments on these items, items number 8, 9, and 10, I just want to ask if there's any motion that we can entertain.
Move to approve.
We have a motion from Board Member Christensen. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
We have a second from Board Member Ashian. And if we could have a roll call vote.
Board Member Ashian?
Yes.
Chair Camacho?
Yes.
Board Member Christensen?
Yes.
Vice Chair Nahai?
Yes.
Motion carries. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And so before we go to our information item, I just want to know if anybody needs a break, and if so, let's take a 10-minute break. Thank you very much. Let's reconvene at 10:32. Thank you. Okay, I think we're ready to reconvene, and we are going to reconvene with item number 11, which is biological objectives in California and the LA region. And so we have a staff presentation, and that would be Ms. Emily Duncan, who is our senior environmental scientist.
Hello, board members. My name is Dr. Emily Duncan, and I work as a senior environmental scientist specialist in the regional programs section under Dr. LB Nye. Today, I will provide a brief overview of bioobjectives and bioassessment, discuss the Los Angeles Regional Board efforts in this program, and end with a summary of the San Diego Regional Board bioobjectives basin plan amendment. The 2023-2024 triennial review of the basin plan was approved by this board on February 22, 2024. The staff recommendation for the list of basin planning priority projects included a project to, quote, provide support for efforts towards developing statewide biostimulation, cyanotoxin, and biological condition provisions. The board strengthened that project to instead, quote, initiate efforts towards developing region-specific biological objectives provisions. This presentation is to bring the board and the stakeholders up to date about bioobjectives in general and our efforts in the Los Angeles region. Next slide. In this presentation, I'll provide a high-level overview of bioobjectives and bioassessment tools. I'll provide an overview of Los Angeles Regional Board efforts supporting bioassessment and how bioassessment data is being used in the Los Angeles Water Board region. I'll briefly summarize the San Diego Regional Board bio-objectives, basin plan amendment, and I'll touch on biostimulatory work at the State Water Board. And I'll wrap up with a summary of the Los Angeles regional efforts. Next slide. So for some background, both the Federal Clean Water Act and California's Porter Cologne Act specifically describe water quality in terms of the biological, chemical, and physical characteristics of water. The Clean Water Act states that the objective of this act is to restore and maintain the chemical, physical, and biological integrity of the nation's waters. California's Porter Cologne Act states that the quality of the water refers to the chemical, physical, biological, bacteriological, radiological, and other properties and characteristics of water which affect its use. Regulators have primarily focused on chemical and physical components, but biological integrity has always been recognized as significant. Biological objectives provides a method to protect biological integrity of the nation's waters. Biological objectives are based on biological assessment or bioassessment. Bioassessment is the science of evaluating the health of an ecosystem by assessing the organisms that live within it. Next slide. So for some national context, water quality chemistry was the natural priority after Porter Cologne and the Clean Water Act were established. Biointegrity required much more effort and took longer to implement. US EPA began funding bioassessment and encouraging states to adopt biological objectives in the 1990s. Bioassessment has a long history of implementation across the United States, and as of March 4, 2024, the blue states on this slide represent states where quantitative biocriteria or bioobjectives have been adopted or are implemented through water quality standards. The green states, including California, all have bioassessment programs in place, but not actual bioobjectives. Next slide. So what is bioassessment? As previously mentioned, bioassessment is an evaluation of the condition or health of a water body based on the organisms living within it. Bioassessment is a tool that allows regulators to see and measure the impacts of multiple pollutants and other stressors like flow on ecological health. The primary focus throughout California and the Los Angeles region has been on the bioassessment of perennial wadable streams. Next slide. So what is measured? A number of different parameters can be measured to assess biological integrity. Bioassessment often includes benthic macroinvertebrates, algae, typically both diatoms and soft algae, physical habitat, and water chemistry. Benthic macroinvertebrates are diverse and abundant. There can be dozens to greater than 100 benthic macroinvertebrate species present at a site. And there may be thousands of individuals per square meter. Benthic macroinvertebrates are particularly useful for bioassessment because they have unique preferences for different microhabitats. They vary according to physical settings, and there are also different sensitivities to pollutants, sedimentation, and flow alteration. And on this slide, the upper left photo is an example of soft algae. The upper right photo is an example of diatoms under the microscope. The lower left photo is a caddisfly larvae, or an example of a benthic macroinvertebrate. And the lower right photo is California Department of Fish and Wildlife staff collecting bioassessment data in the field. Next slide. So more on what's sampled. Bioindicators such as benthic macroinvertebrates and algae are collected in the field and then assessed in the lab. Benthic macroinvertebrates respond to physical habitat, pollutants, sediment, and flow alteration, and are especially useful as they may integrate ecological condition over time. Algae provide a direct link to water chemistry and nutrient stressors, especially. Algae may be useful because they have a short lifespan, rapid growth rate, and therefore will be a more rapid response to stress. Next slide. So to talk about the California Stream Index, the State of California Bioassessment Program began in the mid-1990s, and regional indices started to be developed in the early 2000s. The California Stream Condition Index was developed by 2015, and the Algal Stream Condition Index was developed by 2020, and I'll explain these indices in the next few slides. The California Stream Condition Index was developed through a collaborative effort of California Department of Fish and Wildlife, Southern California Coastal Water Research Project, or SCORP, and the Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program at the State Water Board. As with many indices, there was a calibration and validation period to reach the process that you see here, and this index has been around the longest and implemented in many programs in California. The general process of calculating the CSCI score is represented by the flowchart on this slide. The CSCI is calculated using expected and observed metrics. Metrics can include the species richness and the number of different taxa present in each site. Initially, an expected value is calculated using natural environmental variables like elevation, climate, geology, and watershed size to predict the types of benthic macroinvertebrate species at the site. Next, the site is sampled, and the species collected are identified in the lab. The CSCI score is then the observed species and metrics over the expected species and metrics, so O over E. Next slide. More on the CSCI index. So the thresholds. CSCI scores range from 0, highly degraded, to greater than 1, which is equivalent to reference conditions, or likely intact and not altered. This figure is a distribution of CSCI scores at 473 reference sites with thresholds and condition categories. The thresholds are very likely altered, possibly altered, and likely intact. And they're based on the first, 10th, 30th, and 50th percentiles of scores, respectively. So a score of 0.62 or below, see the red arrow on the diagram, would represent very likely altered sites. 0.62 to 0.79, where the orange arrow are likely altered. 0.79 to 0.92, the yellow, are possibly altered. And 0.92 to 1 is blue, likely intact. Next slide. So the ASCI, or the Algal Stream Condition Index. Another index to use alongside the CSCI is the Algal Stream Condition Index. The ASCI index was developed in a similar fashion to the CSCI score, and there was a calibration and validation process using bioassessment stations across the state, followed by establishing reference condition sites in order to produce the index scores. Again, the overall score is based on observed over expected algal species plus multimetric indices that represent ecological structure. So in summary, the CSCI is based on benthic macroinvertebrates and reflects habitat quality, hydrology, sediment, and flow alteration. The ASCI is based on algae and provides a direct link to water quality. Next slide. Now I'd like to talk a little bit about how the data is used in California. We have a very robust program with approximately 2,000 stations with calculated CSCI scores throughout the state, as shown on this slide. Several different programs support the collection of this data. The US EPA funds the National Rivers and Streams Assessment Program, which is national in scope, but sites in California are distributed statewide. There are other state water board programs like the Perennial Streams Assessment and Reference Stream Monitoring Program that contribute to this data set. The Surface Water Ambient Monitoring Program, or SWAMP for short, has managed the statewide bioassessment effort, and we have used Los Angeles Region SWAMP funds to support bioassessment in our specific watersheds. Next slide. For an example of what bioassessment data look like, this figure from the Ecological Assessment of California's Perennial Wadeable Streams and Rivers Report summarizes CSCI data over a 10-year period from 2008 to 2018. The dark blue indicates sites that are likely intact. The next shade of blue is possibly altered, followed by likely altered and very likely altered. In the top graph, there is not a significant upward or downward trend in statewide CSCI scores, but the data look different when broken down by ecoregions. The ecoregions include Chaparral, Central Valley, Desert Modoc, North Coast, South Coast, and the Sierra Nevada. You can see that in our region, located in the South Coast, that we have approximately 25% of streams in the likely intact category as of 2018, and approximately 45% of streams would fall into the possibly altered category. And the CSCI trend is slightly worse over time. The Los Angeles region has more streams that are likely altered or very likely altered than other ecoregions in the state. Next slide. So regionally, we have a very large data set made up of federal, state, and local effort. There are over 700 unique sampling sites in the Los Angeles region, contributing approximately 2,000 unique samples. This figure depicts sites that are at or above the 0.79 CSCI score threshold with a small blue dot, and all other scores that are below the 0.79 threshold with a red triangle. If you recall from the previous CSCI threshold slide, a score of 0.79 is the lower numeric boundary for sites that are possibly altered. As you might expect, many of our blue dots are in the mountains or other less inhabited areas, and the red triangles are located in the heavily urbanized and populated areas. In addition to state and federally funded bioassessment efforts, the Los Angeles Water Board has the San Gabriel River and Los Angeles River Watershed Monitoring Groups. These groups are primarily made up of NPDES dischargers and were formed based on permit requirements. These groups have been successfully collaborating on monitoring and collecting bioassessment data since 2005. The Stormwater Monitoring Coalition also contributes a large portion of data to our region. There can be the perception that the Los Angeles region doesn't have healthy streams and that we only have heavily modified concrete channelized rivers. But we have some of the healthiest streams in Southern California, especially in Ventura County and the upper reaches of the San Gabriel and Santa Clara rivers. These tools are beneficial for maintaining those healthy conditions and improving conditions elsewhere. Next slide. So here we have examples of some of our bioassessment sites. The Los Angeles Water Board participates in the Southern California Stormwater Monitoring Coalition, which is a regional partnership of 16 stormwater management agencies. As part of the Stormwater Monitoring Coalition, the Los Angeles Water Board funds bioassessment at approximately 12 sites every year. We use surface water ambient monitoring program funds to continue this effort as part of our participation in the SMC. The majority of our sampling effort covers the Santa Clara, Ventura River, Santa Monica, Malibu Creek watersheds. I have two examples of sampling stations on the slide. The one on the top is Matilaha Creek and reflective of reference conditions. And the lower station is Santa Paula Creek, and it's more representative of an urban site with hard sides and a soft bottom. Next slide. Just a couple more examples. The top station on this slide reflects an agricultural stream, so Cayugas Creek. And the second station is a less impacted site in the Santa Monica watershed. Next slide. So how are we using bioassessment in the Los Angeles region? Here's an example from the Malibu Creek and Lagoon TMDL for sedimentation and nutrients. The map on this slide is the Malibu Creek watershed, indicating the benthic macroinvertebrate sampling site and the agency that is responsible for each sampling station. The Malibu Creek and Lagoon TMDL used bioassessment data to improve understanding of why streams weren't healthy. The CSCI scores helped inform causes of poor health in streams within the watershed. If the physical habitat was okay, CSCI scores could still be low due to water chemistry, sedimentation, and nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus. Next slide. So that's an example of causal assessment. So how do these causal assessments work? In reviewing CSCI scores, we can ask why a score is low. Sometimes the answer isn't obvious, and sometimes a site can be scoring much lower than it would be predicted to score. This is where the existing data can be used to try and answer these questions. And if it isn't explained by previous sampling efforts, we can ask, are there data gaps? Are there additional stressors that need to be measured? Is it flow, physical habitat, nutrients, temperature? Do we need to collect toxicology data, for example? This type of analysis was conducted, as I previously described, for the Malibu Creek Lagoon TMDL. Next slide. Another example of how we're using bioassessment in the LA region is to assess watersheds as they recover from wildfire. This is a map of the 2018 Woolsey fire indicated by the red polygon. The dots are the sites where bioassessment data has been historically collected. Using the previous bioassessment stations from the LA region, we chose locations to sample to study post-fire recovery and resiliency. This work was funded primarily by FEMA, so Federal Emergency Management Agency, to improve our knowledge of post-fire recovery. This was done at multiple locations throughout the state that had large fires in 2018. The samples for this effort were collected in 2022, approximately 4 years after the fire. Fires can have big impact on water quality, and projects like these are part of ongoing efforts to improve our understanding. Next slide. So now I'm going to shift over to the San Diego Water Board bioobjective status. The San Diego Water Board has been taking action to go beyond monitoring and has used bioassessment data to develop actual bioobjectives. On December 8, 2020, the San Diego Water Board adopted a basin plan amendment to formally include biological objectives, specifically, quote, inland surface waters with cold or warm beneficial use shall achieve a California Stream Condition Index CSCI score equal to or greater than the 10th percentile of the CSCI reference calibration sites, or that 0.79 number. Notably, this does not apply to fully hardened stream beds. This could be a complication if the Los Angeles Water Board adopted bioobjectives because we have many fully and partially hardened stream beds. The San Diego Basin Plan Amendment does not contain specific requirements to implement the stream biological objective, but does contain a program or framework of implementation, which discusses timeframes for incorporation into permits as applicable. The State Water Board noticed that they would consider approval of the San Diego objectives at the State Water Board meeting on September 18th. However, they have recently postponed their consideration and will first hold a workshop to hear from stakeholders, likely in early 2025, before scheduling a consideration of the amendment. Next slide. To look a little more closely at the San Diego bioobjectives, the bioobjectives do have a number of restrictions. This slide shows the specific water bodies in which stream biological objectives do not apply. It does not include non-stream water bodies, such as reservoirs, lakes, ponds, vernal pools, and other lentic water bodies. It does not include non-weightable stream segments, ephemeral stream segments, or, as I said before, hardened stream bed segments. And for reference, again, the 10th percentile of reference sites is a CSCI score greater than or equal to 0.79. There are no specific requirements to implement stream biological objectives, but a framework of implementation or timeframes for incorporation into permits. Next slide. So the San Diego Water Board included an implementation framework to describe how the CSCI score would be implemented into programs and permits like 303D, education and outreach, TMDLs, MS4, WDRs, MPDS permits, 401 certifications. They'll all have biological objectives implemented on varying time schedules after the effective date. So there's approximately 5 to 10 year range for implementation depending on the program area. If there's a question of determining the status of a water body, San Diego Water Board staff will provide an analysis process, such as site-specific documentation of the nature and flow condition of the water body, sampling records, flow gauge data, aerial photography, mapping, wetland delineations, and site inspections, or other similar documentation. Next slide. On the state board side, they have been focusing bioobjective and bioassessment work on biostimulatory objectives. Biostimulation leads to eutrophication and can contribute to harmful algal blooms. The State Water Board has been leading the effort to develop biostimulatory objectives. But what are biostimulatory objectives? It's helpful to define key terms. So eutrophication, which is the problem, is the accelerated delivery, in situ production, and or accumulation of organic matter within an aquatic ecosystem. One way eutrophication can be assessed is through algal stream indices, as discussed on previous slides. Biostimulatory substances and conditions can be defined as substances such as nutrients, for example, nitrogen, phosphorus, and organic matter, or conditions such as altered temperature and hydrology that can cause eutrophication. So the image on this slide is actually from this month, and it's Leg Lake experiencing a harmful algal bloom. Next slide. The State Board has been researching and discussing different approaches to tackling these issues through numeric and/or narrative water quality objectives. For example, establishing numeric objectives for nitrogen and phosphorus. The State Water Board has been holding a series of internal programmatic and regional board meetings to discuss regional points of view, opinions on what should be used to establish new objectives. The State Board has synthesized internal water board's comments, and the State Board will provide a draft to review in the future, but nothing has been released for public comment, or internal comment for that matter. SCORP has been involved and supported this effort through work on biostimulatory science products like biointegrity tools and interpretation support like the indices ASCI and CSCI, and weightable stream eutrophication synthesis. Los Angeles Water Board staff participated in the working group and meeting series in the spring and early summer of this year. And relatedly, LA Water Board staff track and respond to freshwater harmful algal blooms in the region with support from the State Water Board. These blooms are reported by other agencies or water body managers or the general public through an online reporting system. Finally, we have several TMDLs in our region that have already integrated nutrient criteria of approximately 1 milligram per liter for nitrogen and approximately 0.1 milligrams per liter for phosphorus. Next slide. So in summary, the bioassessment program throughout the state and region is quite robust. We wanted to provide background and context for our discussion surrounding bioobjectives before starting any effort to develop bioobjectives for our region. We continue to participate in meetings and working groups for the State Water Board's biostimulatory efforts. We continue to participate and be engaged in future workshops and future developments concerning bioobjectives at the San Diego Water Board. And Los Angeles Water Board staff continue to track and respond to reported freshwater harmful algal blooms. Los Angeles Water Board swamp funds continue to support bioassessment sampling through the Stormwater Monitoring Coalition. And finally, Los Angeles Water Board funds continue to support SCORP's work on bioassessment, CSCI, and ASCI indices, including work on developing indices for ephemeral streams. Remember, the CSCI and ASCI indices in use now are for weightable perennial streams, so this would be an expansion to cover our ephemeral streams as well. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Yes, thank you for the presentation. Do we have any questions of the board, Vice Chair? Any questions? Yeah, I just had one question in terms of the information. Can it be used to determine, let's say, high priority hardened channels? How can we naturalize them and how, you know, if you have, let's say, hardened channels between two naturalized areas, how can you use that data to make those, nature-based solutions for those hardened channels a priority?
Yeah, I think that that's something that the Stormwater Monitoring Coalition has looked at in terms of trying to study restoration efforts. It's kind of hard to you have to have those projects going on to really be able to use the tools in that way. But yes, that's definitely something that's being talked about.
And I'm glad to hear that you are working on ephemeral streams, because we have so many of them, especially in the Southern California, also in the Northern California areas too. So it'll be more inclusive and more robust then. Okay.
It seems like this, thank you for the presentation. It was great. And just a really good example of women understanding complex matters. So I appreciate you wrapping that up for us today. It does seem like the data that you're collecting could be useful in the State Board looking at minimum flows for the LA River. So just sort of pointing that out as a connection to make.
Just want to say thank you for the presentation.
You're welcome.
I do have a question.
Yeah. Go ahead, Vice Chair.
Yeah, thank you very much. Very, very illuminating and informative. So my question is, you know, about next steps here. So you said that the State Board was scheduled to hear the San Diego amendment in September, I think, of September 18th, mm-hmm. but is now going to it's going to happen. When do we know? Have they rescheduled it?
They're still working to schedule the workshop, so they haven't rescheduled when they'll consider the amendment yet.
Okay, so let's assume for a second that the State Board will approve the amendment. Let's just go down that road together. Then what will that do for us in this region? Will that then provide a template, guidance? I know we're quite different because of all of our hardened streams. You know, we're very urbanized, as you said. We have the dubious honor of having the most likely altered water bodies in the region, which is, I mean, this is not surprising, right? Mm-hmm. But then what? Would we take the State Board's approval and would that lead to a change in our TMDLs? I mean, not for the ones where we've already adopted nutrient levels, but what about other?
Do you want me to? I think that definitely them. It's been about 4 years, right? So hopefully making a decision in the near future would help provide some guidance for us if we were to pursue that as well. Even though we have so many hardened stream channels, we also have a lot of great reference sites to protect.
So, yes, you did. You said that.
So I think, you know, that even if we're hypothetically excluding hardened channels, like San Diego is excluding hardened channels, we still have plenty of other streams that we could protect using that or help bring the standard up as well, improve conditions. So I don't know if that directly answers. Jenny might want to add, or Elby.
I thought Emily did a great job. I think I will just put for context, and then Elby, if you want to add anything. I think the LA Water Board is often the leader in the state in taking up new matters and forging new ground. And I think in this situation, though, San Diego has done so much work. They've done so much work to develop the tools that are used in the CSCI objectives. And so in this case, we really want to see how things go there. And I will say I think we did think it would be done sooner than this. I think but there's been a lot of complicated issues to work out. So I think what we'll do is we'll track it very carefully so that we could quickly act. And I do think that, yes, we would use the State Board's approval as some sort of guidance. LB, did I miss anything?
Yeah, I think that was perfect.
Okay.
Good. Thank you. Thanks so much.
If there aren't any other questions, great presentation. Looking forward to more in the future and to see how we utilize all of this data in an appropriate way. And I think when we do get more data, more information, that we'll be able to at least identify or measure where we need to go in terms of seeing real improvement in streams in the future, and maybe seeing what types of projects or programs could be utilized to get to that point as well. So the data is always good to help us further down the line. So thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me, Chair. Also, Annalisa Moe from Hiola Bay.
Yes.
Would like to comment on this item.
Absolutely. Please.
Get that turned on. Great. Hello again, board members. My name is Annalisa Moe, and now I am speaking on behalf of Hiola Bay and LA Waterkeeper. The Clean Water Act and Puerto Colon Water Quality Act both protect the biological well-being of our waterways, but the current approach in California focuses primarily on pollutants being added to the water. Compared to this pollutant-by-pollutant approach, biological objectives provides a direct and comprehensive measure of the actual conditions of beneficial uses related to biological integrity. The criteria to make such an assessment already exists. The CSCI and ASCII are robust and scientifically vetted tools, and recent research confirms that CSCI is also effective for intermittent streams. As the state bioobjective efforts stalled and morphed into a more limited policy focused on the biostimulation and cyanotoxins, The San Diego Regional Board took the initiative by moving forward with regional biological objectives. These were approved by the Regional Board in 2020, and although the objectives are not yet finalized by the State Board, they do already provide guidance for other regions to develop their own objectives. We commend the LA Regional Board for putting biological objectives on the triennial review priorities list in response to comments from Heal the Bay, LA Waterkeeper, and other nonprofit partners. Now we urge the board to emulate the leadership shown by the San Diego region and to go even a bit further. The board should take meaningful action in the next year to prioritize biological objectives based on CSCI and ASCII scores that protect the ecological integrity of all waterways in Los Angeles, including modified and hardened streams. Good news is that there is already a wealth of data that exists in the LA region collected by agencies, coalitions, and nonprofits, including Heal the Bay and LA Waterkeeper, as was presented by your staff just a moment ago. So we asked the board to identify where there are data gaps and to implement monitoring where needed. We also ask that you make sure that the CSCI and ASCII scores are made publicly accessible. And I would also just note that Heal the Bay Stream team is out weekly during the summer months, so please think of us as a resource and a partner and in help filling any potential data gaps. And we also ask the board to commit to a clear timeline to fully implement biological objectives, even if it requires a phased approach, with phase one looking at non-hardened waterways and intermittent waterways, and a longer-term phase two to turn to the hardened stream beds. Now, we recognize that fully developing biological objectives will take time, but we would like to see initial regulatory actions taken and also recurring presentations on progress made. The staff presentation that we just heard was incredibly illuminating for me. I'm very excited to get a hold of the slides and go through them in a bit more detail, but it would be great to also have additional public updates moving forward so that we understand what the progress is, how the progress is going as we move forward. Thank you very much.
And thank you very much, and thank you for offering your assistance as well, too. Thank you. Any other comments from board members? Okay. Well, very good, very good. And so more to come on that effort. And so now we're going to turn to closed session. And so I'm going to look at legal counsel. If you can introduce introduce the items that we're going to be discussing.
Today we're going to be going into a closed session for agenda items 12G, the Boeing Company versus Regional Water Quality Control Board, Los Angeles Region, Superior Court case, and 12O, Resolution 2300-4, the referral to the Office of the Attorney General for Judicial Civil Enforcement against Day-to-Day Imports, Virgin and Inc. doing business as Art Naturals, and some other parties. Thank you.
Yes, thank you. So we're going to be starting and convening for closed session at about 11:30. And after closed session, we will be adjourning our meeting. Ben, will we be coming back here to adjourn? No? Yeah, so consider adjournment after closed session. Okay, so thank you very much. So I neglected to state that our next regional board meeting will be held on October 24th, 2024, here in this room, and it will begin at 9 a.m. Thank you.